question is, in my mind, about all of this, how do we feel about where we've been in this free agency? We feel great about what we've been in free agency. All in. All in. All in. We're all in with these young guys coming up. And we're all in with this draft.
All in. We're all in. We're all in. We're all in. The word is all in. And now he's trying to twist it to an expression of unbridled enthusiasm. I am all in. I'm all in with cooking a good breakfast. I'm all in with having a good nap this afternoon. That's me, not Jerry. I'm all in. I take a little nap in the afternoon to balance out the fact that I don't sleep much at night. I'm all in for that. I'm all in for getting in my workout before dinner. I'm all in with having a good dinner. I'm all in with trying to find a little time to relax. I'm all in with posting 15 stories a day. I'm all in with this. I'm all in with that. That's not what all in means. At least that's not what it meant. And here we are. And we've been alluding to this from time to time. I want to play this. And yeah. let me just make this point before, because I think Jerry Jones is trying to gaslight us, and this gets back to my overarching theme that I really don't think he cares about winning the Super Bowl as much as he cares about keeping the Cowboys prominent and keeping everyone's wallets open and keeping the Cowboys in a spot where they draw 25 million fans whenever they happen to be on minimum of 25 million fans, and that this Super Bowl thing is just a way to keep the wheels moving in the direction they've moved for the last 30 years, and this all-in thing. He's not all in, but here he is from the Senior Bowl, late January, on the question of whether or not he is all in.
I would anticipate, with looking ahead at our key contracts that we'd like to address, we'll be all in. I would anticipate we'll be all in at the end of this year. Yeah, it will be going all in on different people than you've done in the past. Okay. We'll be going all in. We've seen some things out of some of the players that we want to be all in on.
Now, there's more on the back end, and there's more on the front end. Here's the question he was asked at the time. Is there any change of, hey, we need to go all in this year? Is there any focus or thought process on putting all the chips in to put a winner on the field, including what you do with free agency? That was the question he was asked. All in the usual sense. And Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram even said putting the chips in the middle of the table. And he mentioned free agency. And that's where that all-in word salad came from. And now it's completely changed. And Chris, I saw an item today on NFL.com, an organization over which Jerry Jones has tremendous influence, pushing this same idea. He never said all in about free agency. Yes, he did. It was all in with signing his guys and all in with getting new guys. And they've done neither. That's what's amazing about it. They've done nothing. Other than add Eric Kendricks and re-sign a long snapper, they haven't done anything. Tyron Smith is gone. Tyler Biadasz is gone. 40% of the starting offensive line is gone. They haven't signed CeeDee Lamb. They haven't re-signed Dak Prescott. They haven't given Micah Parsons a new contract. They added Royce Freeman as well. It's laughable how this has turned.
It is laughable because of the things that, you know, they've said, right? Or that he said out loud, definitely. I think the big problem is, and I think, I don't know, you know, where Jerry was at as far as maybe he didn't understand their salary cap situation quite fully then at that point making that. But, like, they have no chips to go all in with, right? I mean, not to the sense of what we're talking about, right? They've already kind of gone, wait, all in means CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, and Dak Prescott. Like, we're kind of screwed. We screwed ourselves there. We can't go all in anywhere. We don't have any other chips to play with right now. So they're trying to nickel and dime the situation and just stay alive a little bit here in the Texas poker, Texas Hold'em poker race here. And that's where they're stuck. And I don't know where they go. And I don't think they got much wiggle room right now with their current situation with, you know, CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons especially.
And that's an excellent point, Chris. And this is why I say when it comes to handling their best players, as it relates to signing them to new contracts, the Cowboys are cheap, short-sighted, and not as smart as they think they are, because what they believe they were going to do, if you listen to the full content of everything Jerry Jones said back in late January, the idea was, we're going to get these contracts taken care of, and then we're going to go all in with whatever cap space we can create by taking Dak's $54 million cap charge and knocking it down some, by extending CeeDee Lamb, paying him what he deserves and knocking down his cap number for this year, by giving Micah Parsons his reward long term. We're going to do all that, and then we're going to pivot to taking care of other business. The problem is, and they should have learned this with Ezekiel Elliott, they should have learned it the last time with Dak Prescott, you can't just go throw your arm around the player and talk him into doing what is good for the team. Remember when Dak gave you the side eye when you were talking to him about not being selfish?
Right.
When these guys get their agents involved, the agents know they've got leverage. The agents know there's desperation. The agents know you're coming to me now because you got to get these existing contracts taken care of before you can write these checks for new players. Well, that means I can get more for my client. So CeeDee Lamb can get more. Dak Prescott can get more. Micah Parsons can get more. And they don't know how to get themselves out of that maze because they're not going to get the cooperation that they feel entitled to from the players who are due to have new contracts, because they're looking at it saying, this is my chance to get paid. See, that's the problem. And that's where the salary cap and the individual interests of the players can kind of, you know, go sideways. And that's why the Cowboys haven't been able to do anything. They haven't been able to do anything, so they've just decided to do nothing.
Yeah, they're stuck. There's nothing they can do. They can't. You know, you said it right. I mean, we've been talking about it. They put themselves in a spot here where they're handcuffed. They certainly are. And they got to worry about, like, you know, again, you don't have a ton of blue chip players in the world, right? And they got one of them on defense that's really special that they go, wait, we got to make sure he's here and we keep him. And, like, there's no way we can let him go. And then CeeDee Lamb is, I think, like a little bit of like, hey, we like him a lot. We like that guy. And then, you know, by all due accounts, I feel like it's a little bit maybe the Brandon Ayuk situation to a degree, where he's asking for, you know, a huge number or a huge, you know, something big as far as the contract's concerned. And they are not looking at it, you know, quite eye to eye as far as how big that number should be. And they're stuck. And, I don't think anything's happening here with the Cowboys. It is what it is. Maybe a few value free agents as we go along here after the draft, but I don't expect any splashes, that's for sure.
Here's Jerry Jones from yesterday's pre-draft press conference on why they haven't done new deals with Dak Prescott or CeeDee Lamb or Micah Parsons.
I'll start it. We want Dak Prescott. That's that. Who in the world would think that we're not working on it? I work on it. It pops open at 2 in the morning sometimes. What you're actually question is why don't you have something done and negotiated and put in the drawer? Well, we'd like to see some more leaves fall. We'd like to see some more action, because it's on your mind. It'd be madness not to know that the contracts are ahead. I want to see a few more cards played, candidly. If you got trouble with when the timing is around here, it's because I'm not ready to go.
Yeah, that's strong right there. Who was he specifically talking about right there is what I want to know. That's a strong, hey, he wants to see how the leaves fall, how that. He's basically saying, like, whoever that was he was referring to, he's not sold they deserve all the money that they think they want. I mean, that's what that was right there.
I would assume it's about Dak. Correct me if I'm wrong, back room, but. You know, and when the leaves fall, is it other contracts? Is it more play?
I felt like it was Dak play.
He said, we want Dak Prescott, and that. It was in reference to all three. Look, hey, Chris, I'm not going to be that direct in my assessment. I think this is just his way to justify why they haven't done anything. And they haven't done anything because they have painted themselves into three different corners. Because they are cheap, they're short-sighted, and they're not as smart as they think they are when it comes to dealing with these guys. And now they're stuck. So you got to say something. You're asked a tough question, you got to say something. So words, 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 lay out, next question comes. That's all it is to me. It's a bunch of meaningless fluff. They are stuck. They are screwed. And they screwed themselves. That's the bottom line. They waited too long to sign Dak Prescott to a second contract. They put themselves over a barrel. They did a second contract with him that puts them even worse over a barrel now. They've dragged their feet with C.D. Lamb. At one point yesterday, he said C.D. Lamb is waiting for Justin Jefferson. Do you think that's going to make it cheaper than what it would be right now? Now is the time to put a number on the table that C.D. Lamb will say, forget about what Justin Jefferson gets. I'm taking mine now. Because it's only going to get more expensive. And it's not that C.D. Lamb is going to try to get more than Justin Jefferson, but Justin Jefferson is going to pull, as we were talking yesterday, he's going to pull the bar for receivers higher than it's ever been. And all the other ones are going to follow in under him. Whatever C.D. Lamb could take now is going to go up when Jefferson gets his deal done. So what are you waiting for? Micah Parsons, what are you waiting for? Waiting for Justin Jefferson to do his deal is going to make it harder to do a deal both for Lamb and for Micah. Because Jefferson, if he gets what he deserves, is going to be the highest paid non-quarterback. He's going to push the number for everyone. So
definitely,
Parsons is going to want more. And Parsons is going to want more than Jefferson, and Lamb is going to want more than he ever would have taken now once Jefferson gets here.
Well, yeah, well, I think that's
and
the problem.
And they don't realize it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably I would be shocked. I would think that they've thrown numbers out to C.D. Lamb. I'm guessing that he's going, wait, no, I don't want to do that. Justin Jefferson's about to blow the market up, and like you're saying, so he's I would imagine in that conversation that he'd be the one dragging this feet a little bit there. But
Chris,
I mean,
Chris, it's – once the numbers are on the table,
right,
everything changes. Look at what the Eagles were able to do with DeVonta' Smith. That's the difference between the Eagles and the Cowboys. The Eagles are proactive, and the Eagles are not cheap when it's time to pay their guys. They swooped in on the opportunity to get A.J. Brown 2 years ago, $25 million a year in new money. Here's DeVonta' Smith, 3 years in, not a big guy. Injuries can happen. $25 million a year in new money on a three-year extension. Boom. And DeVonta' Smith could say, well, you know, I'm expecting to have a big fourth year, and between Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, you know, I could play this out and I could get more than that. Yeah, but it's $25 million per year right now. Right now. Here it is.
You don't think Dallas has offered CeeDee Lamb? You don't think Dallas has offered CeeDee Lamb something like that, right in that range right now?
I don't know. No, I don't think they have, because they're cheap, they're short-sighted, they're not as smart as they think they are when it comes to dealing with these guys. Because look at how we broke down the contracts within the past couple of weeks. The Tyreek Hill Fugazi back end, it's really a $25 million extension and a $23.8 million contract from signing. Devontae Adams is not $28 million. It's closer to $22 or $23. You know, $23 ballpark in new money is the current rate. And so I could see them around $22. They didn't want to pay Amari Cooper $20 million a couple years ago. They traded him for almost nothing. They were going to cut him if they didn't have a trade. And he's been a steal for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, well,
the market went haywire after they traded
him. Well, they made CeeDee Lamb their new lover, their new baby. He was, you know, from Oklahoma. He's from the area. They loved him. He was a first-round pick. They, you know, unlike DeVonta' Smith, who's got, you know, it's Batman and Robin, it's only Batman in Dallas. There is no Robin. So they've cornered themselves with that too. But all I'm saying is I can see the other side of this of they've offered him $23 million, and he's going,
we know.
No.
We know. They'd leak it to somebody. If they thought he was being unreasonable, they'd leak the number to somebody.
Either way, I think my point is that if CeeDee Lamb, if it's something in that range, and those are the conversations that are be talking about, 22, 23, 24 million, he's probably sitting there going, wait, no way, I don't want that. Justin Jefferson, his agents are probably telling him he's going to sign for $36 million a year. Your contract's going to look silly after that. You should want more than that. And that's where Dallas is stuck, I bet. That would be my guess there. And again, that's where the rubber meets the road, and how is Dallas going to get that? The league doesn't view CeeDee Lamb in the same class as A.J. Brown, right? But CeeDee Lamb doesn't care. He does. He views himself as that, and his agency does as well. So I get that, but, you know, that's where it's different, and that's where Dallas, yeah, they're stuck in a spot here. They really are.
I'm going to try to find out today what, if anything, the Cowboys have offered for CeeDee Lamb, because I'm just basing this on their history.
Yeah,
screwing
I hear
around,
you. Right.
Of dragging their feet, of underselling their players, of trying. They still haven't learned that being able to say you play for the Dallas Cowboys is not going to get you a break at the bargaining table with your players. No one is going to take less to play for the Cowboys. And it's everybody wants to create that vibe where you get, ideally, your best player to take less, because then you can start squeezing everybody else by saying, who do you think you are? Patrick Mahomes, who do you think you are? Tom Brady, look at what Tom Brady's taken. Look what Patrick Mahomes has taken. You need to do the same thing if you want to compete for championships. The Cowboys haven't been able to create that vibe, and it may be they're trying too hard. They come on a little bit too strong. We went through all that 5 years ago with Ezekiel Elliott, and all this talk about how the Cowboys will try to negotiate directly with the players, even though it's a CBA violation, yeah, right, to negotiate directly with players. Remember, at some point, maybe it was Jerry that said something, and we made an issue of it. You know, it is a violation of the collective bargaining agreement for the owner to go straight to the player to try to negotiate for him. You have to work with the agent, but they would try to get these guys to see it their way. And they haven't been able to do it, but they still keep trying to get these guys to see it their way. I mean, come on. You're sitting on top of a gold mine. It's the most valuable franchise in all of sports. It's generating millions, if not billions, per year. You better be ready to pay your guys. And I feel like they think this formula that has been proven to be a failure is magically going to work. And it's just not. And that's why they haven't gone all in. But you're never going to hear Jerry Jones admit that. He probably won't even admit it to himself. That's the problem. Before you can ever meaningfully change your approach, you've got to acknowledge to yourself that your current approach sucks.
Yeah, listen, they definitely have to do some adjusting. They definitely need to get out in front of contracts better, just like we've talked about. So that's, you know, there's no doubt about that. There's no denying that. Right. And, you know, for him, like, I think it go back to what we said to start the segment. He can tell himself he's going all in because he's got nothing else to push in. So he's kind of like, this is all in for us right now. We've cornered ourselves in to all in is like only four blue chips this year. That's all we got because we got to save all these other chips for gold toilets and receivers and linebackers and everything like that.
Here's one more clip from Jerry Jones talking about what extending Dak's contract would mean for his supporting cast this year.
So Dak has enjoyed in his career that we're proud of some of the best supporting cast that you could put around him. And to move forward, we're going to have to diminish that. That's a fact. That's the rules. And so that's our challenge, and to make it work out. Dak, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, I can't even blink on that one.
See, here's the reality, and I had forgotten what his cap number was this year. It was going to be close to 60. They did a very minor kicking of the can to knock it to $55.4 million. Cap number. That's how much, like more than 20% of the salary cap this year, roughly 20%. Is accounted for Dak Prescott. And this isn't because Dak's being a greedy pig. This is because when they paid him $40 million a year each of the last 4 years, they deliberately went with lower cap numbers early and pushed it all until now. That's why they're in this spot. They chose to take lower hits then, bigger hits now, and now they're in a mess. And they need Dak Prescott to save them. And the only way he can save them is by doing a contract that allows them to do what they did 2021, 2, and 3, which is push cap numbers into future years. I mean, even next year, Chris, I got to get this number because this number is amazing. Assume Dak Prescott leaves the Cowboys after this year.
Right.
And I think I have it up here somewhere. I had it up. My computer isn't cooperating right now. If he leaves in free agency, he will account for some obscene number that I swear I'm going to get at some point. You know, the Vikings have $28 million this year under Kirk Cousins' name. The Bucks had $35 million last year under Tom Brady's name. The Cowboys next year, if Prescott leaves, will have some ridiculous number, and I promise I'll
go
get
ahead.
It
go look
point.
At it. I'll filibuster for
at.
A second.
Go ahead. Filibuster.
I got
find
some things
it.
To say about this, anyways. Right? I mean, I hope you can listen to me at the same time because I think I'm going to make some good points. But like, this is where. I want to preface this. I really like Dak Prescott. You know that, right? I'm one that goes, I think you can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. Now, I don't think Dak Prescott is a top five talent in football or going to be that guy that you say can ever just take over a game, right? Or, you know, bring a team that's maybe a little less than at the wide receiver position and all that and bring it to a new level. No, I don't think he's that, right? That's Mahomes, that's Josh Allen, that's that crew, that's Burrow, that's a special group right there, okay? But, so saying that, I have tremendous respect for Dak Prescott. I really do. But, right, they've given him leverage like he's, to your point, one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football, and they can't allow that. They got to let this play out. They got to let it play out, let this go for a year, and then sign him up next year if they want him, or let him go. But to the point of like what you're saying here, right, he's got him over the barrel. He's got them in a tough spot, and he's got them in a spot where they're having to pay him like he's one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football, and that's not the case, and we know that. And they can't let that happen, and that's where I think they're going to have to just suck this up, ride the year out, and then see where it goes after that or as they get towards the end of the year if they want to extend him or do something like that there.
All right, I think I have the number here finally. It took a while for the page to load. Next year, what they are looking at, once he is no longer there, it looks like it's going to be another $55 million next year for Dak Prescott if he's not there anymore.
Right.
$55 million this year and $55 million next year. So, you know, this is the reality with a franchise quarterback. You try to manage the cap. You kick dollars into future years. And at some point, there is a huge price to pay. The Saints had it with Drew Brees. The Bucs had it with Tom Brady. The Vikings are having it with Kirk Cousins. And the Cowboys are going to have it with Dak Prescott when he eventually leaves the team. That's what gives him leverage. Not just what he does on the field, but it's a lifeline to the Cowboys for their cap. And this is where it becomes a balance. We had that sound from Dak Prescott the other day about, I don't want to be the highest paid quarterback necessarily. The reality is his situation, his circumstances gives him the leverage to say, you want out of this mess? There's one way to do it. $55.1 million per year in new money for me moving forward. And that's the challenge for the Cowboys. And they created this mess. And it all goes back, Chris, to being cheap, short-sighted, and not as smart as they think they are when Dak finished three seasons and they got him for $2 million. For his fourth season, and then tagged him once. That's where they screwed up. That's where they created this monster that they now don't know how to tame. All right, we need to take a break. More PFT Live right after this. Brandon Ayuk, 49ers receiver, fifth-year option, $14.12 million. We've been talking about this a lot. Mike Silver, the San Francisco Chronicle, added some information yesterday. The 49ers looking for a first-round pick for Brandon Ayuk would more likely get a second-rounder.
Yeah.
And that's where it stands. And, Chris, as I've been saying, and this only makes sense, we've seen this before, it would be foolish for the 49ers to pull the trigger on a trade at any time before the pick they're acquiring is on the clock. If it's during round one, it happens, like the A.J. Brown trade happened. You acquire that pick when it's on the clock if you're the Titans and you go get the guy. Because what would have happened? If they would have gotten the Eagles pick in the middle of round one with four or five picks to go, everybody would have been saying, oh, the Titans are going to take a receiver. Who are they going to take? Let's go get the guy that we think they're going to take. Let's jump them and keep them from getting the guy they want. So whether it's round one or round two for Ayuk, it happens when they're on the clock. And I think it's in play. I really do think it's in play. I would keep an eye on the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though you and I both agree that that doesn't fit with their mold. I think there was interest there in the past, and the 49ers weren't interested in talking. More recently, indications are that they're interested in exploring the possibilities. And I think it all flows from the point you made when this all came up a couple of weeks ago. The idea that the 49ers may be exasperated with Brandon Ayuk's demands. So let's let him see what else is out there so he understands we're not in the wrong ballpark with what we're putting on the table.
That's right. You know, I mean, again, I think it's what Dallas needs to do with CeeDee Lamb too. You know, oh, wait, you want like, you know, top tier of the market money? All right. Well, show us who else is going to do that for you, right? Because top tier of the market receivers can get the trade and the top tier market contract to go along with it. Like Tyreek, Devontae Adams, or who else am I missing there? Somebody else. But either way, A.J. Brown, excuse me. So, yeah, that goes along with that conversation. And, yeah, I'm not shocked to hear this at all, right? I mean, I got to think the 49ers are exasperated by that to a degree. And, yeah, I would think, you know, again, we know players, and I would think he's asking for big-time top-of-the-market type of money after the year he just had and all that. So, yeah, the 49ers, I think you're right. Like, with Ayuk at 30 and then picking at 31, if they're going to make a move, it's not going to happen until right when it needs to happen. Yeah, I think you're right about that. You can't risk doing it right now and then everybody kind of, they're going to try to take this here at this spot. We need to jump them, like, to your point. That's too risky. But it'd be interesting to see how this plays out tomorrow night and if they can get this done or if somebody has, you know, a real wanting of Brandon Ayuk.
And as we said yesterday, there's got to be a team that views him as more valuable than the 49ers do, both as to what the contract would be and as to the fact that they have to give something up to get him. The 49ers don't have to give up anything to keep him. They just have to pay him. Somebody else is going to have to pay him and make the 49ers happy. And again, I always want guys to get what they deserve. But to the point you made yesterday, Shanahan offense, wide ass open, benefiting from Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Brock Purdy. You know, I feel like if the 49ers trade him, the implicit acknowledgement is, yes, he's good, but his skills and abilities have been inflated by his situation.
Yeah, I feel that. I would feel the same way. And I would feel, you know, I think kind of like to what you said here a few minutes ago, I don't think there's anybody that's going to trade a first-round pick for Brandon Ayuk. Now, is there a team? Is there some teams with two picks in the second round, right? Something like that who might go, wait, we got a need at receiver, and Ayuk's out there, and, you know, we'll pay him money. We'll pay him something close to maybe what he wants or whatever. You know, I think that's the interesting thing to look for there, you know, as far as the Ayuk market with the 49ers is concerned.
All right, let's take a break. When we return, an update on the Falcons and Eagles tampering investigations. Will we get a ruling in either case this week? That's next here on PFT Live. Look, pro tip. Any coach, any GM, anything you say into a microphone can and will be used against you.
Sacre bleu.
There's a snake in my boots. If you're not calling it a Frankfurter, you're just not living right, baby. Turd Ferguson and Dick Hammer signing on.
Sometimes you're giving me more credit in my brain than I deserve.
For Christmas this year, the Hess truck's here.
Hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey.
He's an asshole. Florio.
Yeehaw!
Yeah.
There's still more room in the crust for cheese. There's a spear, not a knife, but a spear jammed into your ass. What would the chicken version be? Chucked, plucked, and ready to... Too bad that wasn't on the air. See, you know, when they play that, that's very well done. I really don't remember which ones were on or off the air.
Right.
Sometimes the broader setting, like, you know, you at a mic and another one empty calling me bad names, then it's obvious we're not on the air.
No, you said shoving a spear up your ass on the live show, actually. That was not off air.
Most of those things that were said were on the air. The very last one was a take on Jim Harbaugh at the start of the offseason program saying that he's locked, cocked, and ready to rock. That was that actually almost made Miles Simmons do a spit take during a break, and that's why I said I wish that had been on the air. Okay, yesterday on the air we gave you an update on the Falcons and tampering situation. Let me try that again. Last time on PFT Live we gave you an update on the Falcons and Eagles tampering investigation, and here's how this happened. Shefty posted this long article that was only available behind the ESPN Plus paywall with all these little draft nuggets. And buried down near the bottom was a report from Shefty that the Falcons and Eagles tampering investigations could be resolved this week. And then yesterday, he posted without context or explanation that the NFL says they won't be resolved this week. Well, this might speak to the dynamic I was alluding to yesterday, that when I'm barking up the wrong tree, somebody tends to say, hey, you're barking up the wrong tree. And it sounds to me like somebody from 345 Park Avenue reached out to Shefty and said, we're not announcing anything this week. Why do you think we're announcing anything this week? We're not. So that's good news for the Falcons and Eagles, because if you're going to lose draft picks, you're not losing them this year. You're losing them at the earliest next year.
Yeah, no, that's right. They can plan and not worry about that. You know, this weekend, I saw the report and I was like, oh man, Florio's going to be disappointed that something's not going to happen here for draft night. We're going to have all that to talk.
I don't care. Well, I want the news. Yeah, I absolutely want the news.
I know.
Absolutely.
But you know, hey, we'll see where it goes. The Falcon one is the one I'm most interested in there, and I think that's the one where I think we all think that could go a lot of different ways. But yeah, won't disrupt round one. That's good. And of course, you know, I even for the tampering thing, and I know I've seen could they lose a first round pick? I feel like that's a little aggressive for this, right? And I don't want to see the Falcons lose the eighth pick of the draft or anything there. So it's a big year for them.
Well, they're not going to now.
Yeah, and that's
not going to now.
That's my point. That's what I'm happy about for them.
And look, here's what I'm going to be very curious about, because the Eagles situation, it wasn't even anyone from the Eagles or Saquon Barkley who said anything. It was James Franklin, the Penn State coach, telling a story about how they recruited Saquon to Philly and talked about the Penn State fans, and Franklin spoke in a way that suggested there were direct communication between the Eagles and Saquon.
Right.
And everyone connected to it denied it. So it could just be Franklin had bad information. If the Eagles are going to get whacked, it means that someone will have done a very aggressive investigation into phone records and questioning witnesses and digital footprints. And we proved through our investigation that there was communication. And that's what's going to be fascinating to me, because will we have different standards of how aggressive the investigations were? Because an aggressive investigation of the Falcons could lead to multiple violations. Talking to the head athletic trainer when he shouldn't have been. Well, and more accurately, the head athletic trainer talking to Kirk Cousins when that shouldn't have happened. Ryan Pace, director of player personnel, talking to Cousins when it shouldn't have happened. Possibly a meeting with a head athletic trainer, because Cousins started to say met with and corrected himself. Do you aggressively investigate that? Kyle Pitts recruiting Kirk Cousins. Was he put up to it by the Falcons? Did Raheem Morris know about it? Did Terry Fontenot know about it? The Darnell Mooney thing where Cousins actually participates in the effort recruit Mooney.
This one's egregious in a lot of ways.
Like, how far do they go?
Right.
And will there be transparency? And hovering over all of it is Rich McKay's the chair of the competition committee, and he's tight with the league office. Are they going to set that aside? And this is where other teams should be saying, wait a minute. What would you be doing to us if we did that? We got, like, if I'm Stephen Ross, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, hey, 345 Park Avenue, I fully expect that there will be a significant punishment informed by what you did to me for supposedly tampering with Sean Payton and Tom Brady. I don't know if they ever admitted to it, but you know, you got these guys red-handed four different ways because Kirk Cousins wasn't properly prepared to go in there and you know, not admit to the world that tampering had happened in four different ways. So how transparent will it be? How aggressive will the investigation be? What will the punishments be? Eagles and Falcons. And for now, they've decided they're kicking the can. They're kicking the can down the road.
The Falcons one would, you know, concern me, because you listed it out perfectly. There's some things there that are like, oh, wow. You know, the Eagles, Penn State, you know, that one there, yeah, I got to hear more about that, right? That could just be a coach hearing something secondhand from the agent, whatever, and he just got his facts wrong, right? But I'll say this. I don't think the Falcons thing is nearly as egregious as Stephen Ross and the Miami Dolphins. Those two guys were under contract with their football teams. Kirk Cousins was a free agent. There's a difference there. They were going to finagle, let's get you guys to retire and then come out of retirement and come here and play it and do that. That was the most coup d'etat, up yours NFL, we'll make our own rules and do what we want type of thing that we've seen. They deserve that. I don't think this is as egregious with that as the Falcons.
I agree with the context, but they didn't get Peyton or Brady. And they still lost a first round
game. Well, it's just
and
like you say with the Rashee Rice thing. You got to stop. When you're going 120 down,
I know.
You got to stop and put the example down, right? You
know? I agree.
Yeah.
But in this case, you've got clear violations. I mean, the Chiefs lost a third-round pick for talking directly to Jeremy Maclin during the negotiating window when he was in the process of going from the Eagles to the Chiefs in 2015. They lost a third-round pick in 2016 over that. And, well, okay, you've got head athletic trainer talking to Cousins. You've got Ryan Pace talking to Cousins. You've got Kyle Pitts spending multiple weeks recruiting Cousins. Remember how he denied it when I put out there they were talking about, you know, jersey, who's going to wear number 8, and all that ended up being 100% true. Why did he deny it? Why did you feel compelled to deny it? Because you know you're doing something that maybe you shouldn't be doing because the Falcons have told you to do it. I don't know if that's the answer, but you'd investigate that. And this idea that he actually participated, Cousins participated in trying to convince Darnell Mooney during the negotiating window to go from the Bears to the Falcons. How aggressively are you going to explore this? Because I feel like the Falcons' attitude, especially because they didn't even bother to tell Cousins what he probably shouldn't say at his introductory press conference, they just didn't care. It's like, we don't care. We're just going to do it. And they got their guy. At the end of the day, whatever they lose, their response is going to be, doesn't matter, we got our guy.
Yeah.
And Chris,
yeah,
the other thing I haven't talked about, we don't know how much they did to communicate with people about the Achilles tendon.
Yeah,
that was
right.
How this first all came up in my head.
Right.
How did they get comfortable enough to give this guy $100 million guaranteed when they're not allowed to gather any medical information? Surely they have. That's another area where they may have committed a violation that Cousins didn't blurt out during his introduction.
You mean that video on the tennis court didn't soothe all their concerns of him throwing the football? You mean that didn't do it? That wasn't enough that he was out on the tennis court and threw some 10-yard passes?
I think they did a little more homework than that.
I think so too. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. The first non-quarterback to be drafted, who will it be? We'll look at the odds next here on TFT Live.
CJ, I'm going to ask you to put your GM hat on. There's a lot of questions about who should be the wide receiver one. Why should it be Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Why should it be Marv? Put on the tape. He's done it from really his freshman year, his true freshman year, to now. When you talk about, I read something like he's NFL ready, but other guys have more potential. That makes no sense. Like, what? Like, if you're NFL ready, how is that not potential? You know, like, you want longevity. You want somebody who's been doing it, you know. And for him, that's what he sleeps, eats, and he breathes. You know, he's a worldly talent, but also his work ethic and, you know, how he gravitates, like, that room. I challenged him that last year when Jackson went down. He had to take over as leader, and he did that. I'm super, super proud of him. And, man, who's up there, man, be smart. Don't be dumb. Don't think too hard. All right.
Oh, there's a walk-off. Be smart, don't be dumb. I kind of like that on a T-shirt. Be smart on the front, don't be dumb on the back. And the thinking is that when the Cardinals are on the clock at number 4, they won't be dumb. Marvin Harrison Jr., the favorite via DraftKings to be the first non-quarterback selected. We all tend to believe it's going to be quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. I guess there's an outside chance it'll be quarterback, quarterback, and then maybe somebody would try to jump the Cardinals for Harrison. I doubt that that happens, but still, Harrison, doesn't matter what spot, it's just he's the first guy other than a quarterback, whether it's 3 or whether it's 4. The odds-on favorite is Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, that seems to be the thought around the league there. That pick number 3 is probably going to go to a quarterback some way, right? Trade, whoever. Patriots stay there at 3. Who knows? Whatever there. But yeah, I think, again, what I'll say is I think the league as a whole, Malik Nabers is the number 1 guy on most teams' board. I think the league as a whole thinks Arizona will do the safe thing. I think people look at Arizona from what I've heard, and they'll go that route with the safe pick. They're trying to sell Marvin Harrison Jr. as the next Larry Fitzgerald out there. You can tell they're framing it that way. So it feels that way, right? And that would be my bet if I had to bet money. Now, I think there's some interesting things here. You know, Nabers, as we talked about, I think quietly could be a guy that might be people would think about trading to number 3 or number 5-4. I do. And the other interesting thing too, Mike, that I think is part of the conversation here that's just interesting, and not that I think they're going to be the first guy off the board, but I don't think so. But the tackle conversation, right? Where I think most people thought Joe Alt was definitely going to be the first tackle off the board, right? I think that the NFL is, J.C. Latham is every bit right there in the same category as Joe Alt, with football teams. And there's definitely teams that have J.C. Latham as the number one tackle on their board, right? So that could be another just interesting wrinkle and thing to look for tomorrow night, because I think a lot of people had Ault penciled in as the number one guy off the board no matter what. And I think it's going to be a close one. We'll see where it goes.
I talked to Ault last week. You can find the conversation on the NFL on NBC YouTube page. Guy studying mechanical engineering at Notre Dame. His dad was a first-round pick of the Chiefs. His brother played professional hockey, and he talked about how he learned different things from his brother that he can incorporate into football. You think about the grind that is being a professional hockey player.
Ooh, yeah.
So Ault seems like he's ready to go. And that comment that Stroud made about Harrison being NFL ready, I mean, there is a fundamental difference between a guy who's plug and play, but his ceiling might not be at a certain level, and another guy where it's more a roll of the dice, but his ceiling could be a lot higher. I think that's where neighbors would be. Harrison's a safer pick with a higher floor. The question is, where's the ceiling for Harrison versus some of these other guys? And that's part of the prognostication that goes into making these guesses when it's time to make your draft pick.
He makes that point, and I hear him there, and he, you know, there's a lot that he's right about, certainly C.J. Stroud. But what I would say is the league looks at Malik Nabers, and I would too, and go, he's one of the safest picks of the draft. In fact, he's got more versatility than Marvin Harrison Jr. and can play more positions and do more things. So where I'd go, you know, his floor is extremely high too. It is. Right. But I think a little bit of the name, the pedigree, the size, if you like a size receiver, right, that might be a thing Arizona's looking for. And I think that'll lead it to them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four. But the neighbors thing is interesting to see where he lands, where he goes, and maybe will there be some action for him at some point.
And let's remember, owner is very involved in Arizona. That was established last week, if we didn't already know, that most owners are very involved. And that Marvin Harrison Jr. name has been ricocheting around the grapevine for years now, ever since he first got on the field at Ohio State.
Right.
So how can you pass
on
Marvin Harrison Jr.? By the way, the odds came courtesy of DraftKings. Oh. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NBA. And during the NBA playoffs, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use promo code PFT Live when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook.
The crown is yours.
Bet responsibly. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this. Some teams say happy birthday on the way out the door. Others just go with thank you. Thank you. Now pack your stuff and go. I don't know what they're exactly thanking him for. I think if Zach Wilson were creating the graphic, it would be another word where the first one ends with K and the last one is U.
Yeah, right.
But regardless.
Thank you.
Thank you
for dealing with us and our fan base crapping on you and crazily for your whole career and us changing coaches and making your job as hard as possible. Thank you for enduring all that. Good luck in Denver.
You know, it is amazing to think that less than three years in, four of the five quarterbacks taken in the first 15 spots of the 2021 draft are basically given away for nothing.
What adds to this craziness.
You don't have much time.
Yeah.
You don't have much time.
Right.
And then the question is, when will you ever get that second opportunity? And are you so stained and tainted from your first opportunity that they won't even put you on the field in your second opportunity? I mean, Justin Fields, we know, is going to play. I think he'll play some role with the Steelers. Some people think he's going to earn the starting job by week one. Trey Lance, he's only going to play if there's injury. Zach Wilson's only going to play if there's injury. Mac Jones is only going to play if they're injury, and we have no idea what they're going to do. And two of the guys are on the same damn team now as Mac Jones is backing up Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, you make points there, and you go, well, this is where, hey, you just look back to the conversations we just had. That's why the draft is crazy now, right? Guys that are like, you know, traditionally we'd go, hey, he'd be a mid-first-round quarterback. I'd pick a quarterback in the 20s, right? Back in the old days, quarterbacks used to get picked then, right? Dan Marino got picked in the 20s. We used to see people then. Now it's either like you're in the top seven or you're down in round three, right? And I think it's a little bit because of the salary cap situation. There's a rookie salary cap, all of that. So teams are a little bit more willing to be aggressive with these quarterbacks in the draft and do that. But, you know, to your point, too, yeah, I do think we're losing a few guys as far as who we can develop. And if you let it, you know, work out, he could be something down the road, right? Geno Smith and other guys that we've talked about that are kind of like, whoa, they got that talent. They were in a weird situation. And I do think that the league gives up on some of these guys a little too quickly right now because of that. And I don't understand that.
At the end of the day, there's you know, 32 teams, only one quarterback's playing at a time. And it's hard. Once you've been thrown off the ride, it's hard to get back on the ride because all the other seats are taken. How do you earn your way back onto the field? And that's going to be the challenge for Wilson and Lance and Fields and Mac Jones. How do they show that they even deserve to have a second chance? We need to take a break. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this. The Houston Texans have some revised uniforms. They introduced that awesome red helmet last year. They've got different jerseys. They've got different looks.
That one's cool.
That's
amazing.
Hey, cease and desist, Texans. You're ripping off the Vikings horn idea there with the bullhorn.
Well, they got just as many Super Bowls as you guys do. So screw off, Vikings. You got no say. Sorry. Speaking got a bigger
of,
horn than you.
speaking of cease and desist, let's see the one with the blue. Do we have the H? They've got this new alternate
H. Right, the H
that has the old Oilers blue on it. And remember, the University of Houston had Love Ya Blue style uniforms. They got the cease and desist letter from the Tennessee Titans, who still own those rights. See the upper right corner there, that blue. Now, look, I suspect that if the NFL, the Titans, and the Texans have their act together, this was all cleared ahead of time.
Right.
And the Texans wouldn't have been allowed to do this if the Titans weren't on board with it. I'm surprised that the Titans agreed to let that color infiltrate the Texans' overall scheme. I would think the Titans would have been, no, that's our blue.
I wonder how much, you know, copyright infringement's involved there. But either way, I like the look. I'll say that. I like all of that. I really do.
I want to know
nice improvements.
On TV.
Right? Those.
I want to be able to. You know, when I turn on the game.
The smartest guy on earth that you know everything. All of a sudden, now you can't read and figure out colors. What are you talking about?
I knew when Nike got the deal in 2012, it was going to be cut the piano. I knew it was going to be just like Oregon, where every damn week it's a different helmet, it's a different jersey, it's different pants.
What's that team with the big bull on their helmet? They're from Houston. I don't know. What's the team with the Bronco on the helmet? I'm not sure who that team is. Up yours, Florio. See ya.
Dick. All right, good. See ya.
All right, big guy. See ya, man.
All right, good stuff. Bye.
See ya.